2020 strikes again and takes out another talented soul. We'll say goodbye to Sean Connery on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on W8YR is supported by Hunter Springs Landscape Artisans, helping clients throughout the Central New York community create their own unique outdoor living space for 37 years. Services and project galleries found at hunterspringslandscape.com.
Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. Iconic actor Sir Thomas Sean Connery passed away on October 31st, 2020. He was 90 years old.
Shocking. You're one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen.
Thank you, but I think my mouth is too big.
No, it's the right size. For me, that is.
I admire your luck, Mr.
Bond. James Bond.
Mr. Bond, I suppose you wouldn't care to, raise the limit?
I have no objections.
Make sure when your shift is over, you go home alive. Here endeth the lesson.
Now, there are those who believe we should attack the United States first. Settle everything in one moment. Red October was built for that purpose.
Terrible things in England. So terrible that you fled the country. And I'm ashamed to say that Her Majesty's government is willing to offer you amnesty in return for your services.
The dashing Scottish actor, known mostly for his character-defining role as 007, James Bond was a high achiever in the motion picture industry, recognized with Academy Awards, BAFTA Awards, Golden Globes, and Kennedy Center Honors. Here to discuss the knighted actor and his career is an icon in his own right, the illustrious Bob Thompson, media scholar and trusty professor of television and popular culture at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. Welcome back, Bob.
You know, I have a sneaking suspicion that I am way out of my league in terms of knowledge of Sir Connery. But
well, I'm a huge fan. If people know anything about me, it's in terms of my, you know, what I like in terms of entertainment is I'm a science fiction geek and a huge James Bond fan. And as James Bonds go, Connery was the first and the best, in my opinion. What do you think in terms of the Bonds?
Yeah, I mean, he set the standard, if nothing else, but by the calendar, by chronology. He was the first Bond, and then he went on to do it five times in a row. So not only did he establish the franchise, begin to influence the very way Ian Fleming conceived of the character. So he really got into the genetic code of James Bond, and then he repeated it four more times. And then that little break that nobody wants to talk about, when the other Bond, whose name shall not be stated, goes in between. And then he does two more after that. So clearly he had established that Bond character. And of course, he did that between, what, 1962 and about, what, 71 or something like that?
Those are about the times. He started with Dr. No, and then went on to do From Russia with Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, and You Only Live Twice. Of course, it's the women, the martinis, the fights in tuxedos, yeah. You know, it is gadgets and cars and the borderline non-consensual sex.
I mean, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
It's a different time, but.
and the other thing that's disturbing is that not only Bond, and we can talk about, if you ever read, and I was way too young to have done this, so I don't have to pretend that I didn't, I actually didn't. But the culture that Playboy magazine at its peak in the 60s and 70s, when it was all about lifestyle with a capital L, and James Bond, Sean Connery's James Bond in those years really did represent that kind of overindulgence, embracing of luxury, that kind of cool that one thought of in the pages of Playboy. But today, when you go back and look at those, you really have to watch them as pieces of cultural archaeology, because there is And the very words borderline non-consensual, can there even be borderline?
Yeah, exactly.
And then on top of that, and I hate to speak ill of the recently passed, but Connery himself, it was quoted as saying in one interview, and then I think he repeated it to Barbara Walters, something to the effect of sometimes women need to be slapped.
Yes.
And again. So it is that kind of, and you and I, Joe, have talked about this 100 times with regards to all kinds of other artists and movies and TV shows. But when that suave, martini, all that kind of stuff happens, it is so seductive. But at the same time, there is that kind of arch, more scary part of it that I think not only Connery, but Bond himself really embodies.
Yeah, he was playing a character in the movies, but he certainly did sell it, you know. So
right, he
sold the role. He did those the start of it, didn't want to get typecast as James Bond, so left, but was lured back for a big payday for, I think, came back for Diamonds Are Forever, and then again for Never Say Never Again. But yeah, really defined the role of James Bond, a different kind of Bond than, say, Roger Moore. Roger Moore came across more as a sort of ladies' man, more of a gentleman, whereas Sean Connery's Bond was a lot more rugged, a little more tough, rough and tumble, a little more violent. And unfortunately, the reasons why he steps out as my favorite Bond. So that's my take on James Bond. But he did not want to be limited to that role. So we should talk a little bit about some of the other things that he did. And when these passings happen, you know, I'm always delighted to discover some things about some of these artists that, you know, that I didn't know. Some of the early work, you know, digging around in the background. I mean, he did everything from episodes of The Wonderful World of Disney, you know, where he was, I think it was an episode about catching the King of the Leprechauns. You imagine James Bond catching the King of the Leprechauns.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen that. He was also in a Jack Benny episode. But
yep, he was in a Jack Benny episode. Yeah, there was a 1959 Magical World of Disney, and the episode was called I Captured the King of the Leprechauns, did a back Jack Benny show. He actually played in a Tarzan movie called Tarzan's Greatest Adventure. So I got to figure out how to
get back to this leprechaun. So did he is he the guy that captures them? Is he the leprechaun?
He's the guy that captures him. And it seemed like early in his career, because of his Scottish background, he was
that
being
made sense. Yeah,
he
right.
was being cast in some of these movies.
They didn't put him in a Lucky Charms commercial.
Yeah, he did a Disney movie called Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
That I remember.
So, you want to talk about, I think I'd rather get typecast as James Bond than like a leprechaun catcher.
But interestingly enough, even after what, Dr. No is 62? And
yep.
2 years later, he was doing, and I think he'd already done between that From Russia with Love and maybe even Goldfinger, he did Marnie with Hitchcock.
Right. I wanted
his best work. Yeah.
I wanted to bring that up. I thought, as a film fan, that I thought I had seen every Hitchcock movie. I do not remember having seen Marnie. And it looks like a very interesting movie. And it actually takes place, or some of the scene, is in my hometown of Baltimore.
I remember seeing that for the first time when I was in college, you know, these film society, Hitchcock Fest or whatever. And so I was already like 18 years old. And that movie totally creeped me out, more than The Birds, more than, you know, lots of Hitchcock's stuff. It's a really disturbing movie, and you're not really quite sure why, but Sean Connery is very good at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's billed as a psychological thriller, like The Birds, stars Tippi Hedren.
That has
that in common. And then he did a movie called The Molly Maguires, which I did see in 1970, and stars with Richard Harris. And it's about a secret organization of Irish coal miners established in Pennsylvania to fight the coal mining overlords. Very interesting. That's where I actually, and I know it's a fictional story, but I actually learned about or got some of the idea about how these coal mines worked back then, when you would get paid on payday, would come around, and then they would begin to deduct everything that you owed the company store or equipment that you broke. So you'd end up seeing your dollars whittle down to like a 25 cents payday.
Just like Syracuse University. A lot of equipment. Molly Maguire's is my favorite coal mining movie, and that's saying something. There's a lot of good coal.
Yeah, very good one. So that's one that to offer to folks to go back and check out. Not all, you know, highbrow stuff. He was the voice of a dragon in Dragonheart, you know, so he's run the gamut in the kinds of movies he's done, right?
He has. And can we get this over with so that we don't have to talk about it anymore? But it has to be mentioned. And that is the way in which Saturday Night Live, via Daryl Hammond playing Sean Connery on Celebrity Jeopardy, completely brought Sean Connery to a whole new body of people who had seen The Man Who Would Be King or Murder on the Orient Express or Hunt for Red October or any of that stuff, or maybe even Bond for that matter. And I have to say, those, and they played over a number of years. I think they probably did, 25 of those sketches from the 90s into the whatever. And I kind of resent Saturday Night Live and Daryl Hammond for this, because I cannot watch a Sean Connery movie anymore where it doesn't take me the first 10 minutes to get that Daryl impersonation on Jeopardy out of my head.
In last place with negative $69. Oh, brother, Sean Connery. Negative $69. Okay, that wasn't your score.
Well, 69 is how I scored with your mother last night. Ow!
It's how a regularly done impersonation can actually take over the host being. I think Dana Carvey did that with the first George Bush, in a way that whenever the real president talked, it was like, wait, you're doing it wrong.
I'm getting that with Baldwin and Trump.
Yeah. There's a real sense of that as well. The only thing with Trump is there's so many people doing him.
Yeah.
They're diluted. Where with Sean Connery, I can think of one. I'm sure there were others doing it back in the 60s. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I remember the day, couple days after, you know, the days of, after it was announced that he had died, nearly everybody I talked to at some point slipped in a bad impersonation of Daryl Hammond doing a good impersonation.
You know, when I think about his career, there are, and I have to, you know, try to get away from the Bond movies. Those are always my favorites. But there are a couple of movies that stand out for me in terms of Sean Connery's career that are favorites of mine. One is called The Name of the Rose. Did you see Name of the Rose?
Oh, yes.
1986 with a great cast, F. Murray Abraham and a young Christian Slater. It's like a detective movie taking place in a medieval abbey, right? And he's a bit of a friar, and he's trying to solve a murder mystery. It's a really dark and sort of sometimes creepy movie, and I really enjoyed it.
I did too. The book I tried and failed many times to get through, but the movie I watched and succeeded in getting through more than once. And he was perfect.
I mean, yeah. And F. Murray Abraham is a wonderful actor, and that was the first time I had ever come across Christian Slater. So very enjoyable movie. If folks haven't seen that is one to check out. 1986, The Name of the Rose, for which he won a British Academy Film Award. And then there is the one that he's known for, I think, most in this country outside of James Bond movies, is The Untouchables back in 19. So he had a nice stretch there, 86 and 87. He did.
And he got his Oscar for Untouchables.
Got his Oscar for
Bond. Never got an Oscar.
And also a Golden Globe Award. That was with Kevin Costner, Robert De Niro, Andy Garcia. And it's the story of Elliot Ness and his group of untouchables. He was a beat cop in there, very wise, hard-nosed beat cop. Very strong role for him. And most folks, I think, will cite The Hunt for Red October as another favorite, which was a really good one. Do you have some performances or movies that resonate with you?
Well, this is really obscure, and I'm not sure how easy it will be to find, although it might be all over the place. He did a production for television of Macbeth in 1960. He played Macbeth, which is a perfect role for Sean Connery, maybe even more perfect than Bond. And it was a television production, so it was highly abridged. But he was one of my favorite Macbeths, and I've seen hundreds of productions of that play. So that was very early in his career, pre-Bond. And I still go back to that every now and again. And then I had a certain soft spot in my heart for being Indiana Jones' old man. Kind of a fun thing. But Hunt for Red October, even though it's your standard kind of thriller, whatever, he really chewed up the scenery in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's what I appreciate about Sean Connery that you don't get with a lot of actors with longevity, particularly actors that are recognized for their good looks just as much as they are for their acting. And that's the way that he sort of gracefully aged into a different kind of actor. A lot of actors, I think, especially when they're defined by looks in a certain era, they age out. No one's hiring them, or they're still trying to hold on to some of the older roles that they were doing that they can no longer physically pull off. And he didn't have that kind of baggage. He went from the extremely handsome, young, rugged leading actor into a more seasoned, older, just like Harrison Ford, same thing. Made that transition, and I think made it successfully, so that he could continue to have a long career, which I think by all measures is over 70 years in the business.
Oh, yeah. He's been his IMDb thing goes decade after decade. And it is interesting how, and I this is very different for male actors and female actors, or has been, that may be changing now. But when he got People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive, which I know you and I are always waiting for that to be announced. he was like 59, I think. Wasn't that in like 19?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And then like a decade later, near the turn of the century, he got the, I think, Sexiest Man of the Century or something like that. I believe that was the title. Now, of course, those things are hardly scientific and they're for the most part meaningless, but they do, it's like Time Magazine's Person of the Year kind of thing. They are certain cultural presences in and of themselves, self-fulfilling kind of thing. And the fact that he was still being called that, you know, many, many years, decades for that matter, after he had played James Bond, I think is a testament to what you were talking about, and that evolution included the different kind of roles. He didn't continue to do Bond for obvious.
Right. I mean, he could maintain that charisma from early in his career all the way to probably the last movie he ever made. So he kept that going, which is something that I always appreciate in actors that have longevity. There's some peculiar things. Well, not really peculiar, but you know, I read that he was someone who did not trust folks with his money. I think on a few occasions sued managers and production studios for mishandling either his money or not paying him the way that they were supposed to. So he had developed this serious mistrust of money and got into some financial struggles on some bad investments. When I think of Sean Connery, I usually think of somebody who is set financially, but that's not always the case. But a very long, fulfilling career. You know, I hope when I pass, I'm passing at 90 or above. So, you know, it's just a very long, fulfilled life. And it was a pleasure just having him as a part of our entertainment landscape.
It was, and whenever, and you and I have had many of these kind of, I guess, obituary, memorial programs of a number of people, but the one silver lining when someone passes in the movie or television industry is that they are immortal in a really real sort of way. None of his movies go to the grave with him, and there will still be new generations of people that will probably, when they're homesick and they turn on TBS on cable and it's running one of its every Bond movie ever made marathons or whatever, that whole body of work doesn't go away with him. And as we're reviewing it, there are a lot of these movies that I have seen that I really do want to go back and look at. And there's a few of them that I haven't seen. And at the top of the list is that one where he kills the leprechauns. That I can't.
I'm gonna find that, and I'm gonna send you a link if it is out there. But hey,
you
Bobby,
know, I think that really should be watched on the big screen.
Yeah. Hey man, it's always a pleasure having you on here. We'll have to have you back when we're not talking about someone who's passed away. We got to find something that's juicy and current and happening, and have you back soon.
Let's do it soon. I'm sure there's. We won't have to dig too hard to find. Something.